Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The third and final presidential debate last night might have differed in style from the other two, but not so much in the fact category, with plenty of fodder again for the fact checkers overnight. Joining us again to cover that ground is Robert Farley of PolitiFact.com. It's a political fact-checking website created by the St. Petersburg Times. Welcome back, Bob.
We're at the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Yeah. Good morning.
So the candidates again contradicted each other often throughout the debate, each offering, I don't know, as you guys put it in on your website, incorrect or twisted factual claims. So let's just get started with President Obama when he accused Mitt Romney of saying during the 2008 campaign that we should ask Pakistan for permission before going into that country to kill or capture terrorists. What did he really say, or what happened with that?
Well, this was Romney. He had made a comment after Obama said in 2007 that if we have actionable intelligence about a terrorist target in Pakistan and we don't get permission from the president to Musharraf at the time to act, we will anyway. And Romney was very critical of that. But then when he was later asked about it, he said, well, of course, I wouldn't take any options off the table. I just wouldn't talk about it. I would keep our options quiet. So that was really his beef with Obama. It was not necessarily that he'd gone in without asking permission, but that he sort of announced his intentions.
Obama, you said, wrongly accused Romney of not telling the truth when Governor Romney said, you and I agreed some U.S. troops should be left in Iraq. What about that?
Well, the fact is that President Obama also wanted to leave some troops in Iraq. There was some negotiation with the Iraqi government. There was a sticking point about the Iraq's refusal to grant legal immunity to the remaining troops. And so he had wanted to keep 3,000 or 4,000 troops there, but because of that sticking point, they didn't leave any. Mm-hmm. Romney, on the other hand, wanted to keep, he said, anywhere between 10,000 and 30,000. So really, it was a difference in the number of troops that they had hoped to keep there.
The president said unemployment among military veterans is lower than for the general population, and that caught my attention right away because in my coverage, most of it's been pretty contemporary with veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars.
Right, and that's the difference here, is that if you're going to talk about all veterans, he's correct. However, if you look at the veterans from the most recent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the unemployment is actually higher than the national average. It's actually about 9.7% right now. So he's technically accurate, but I think if most people were thinking about it, they probably thought he meant Iraq and Afghanistan vets, and theirs is actually a little higher.
If you have a question for our guest, Rob Farley, Deputy Managing Editor for FactCheck.org, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page and post question or comment there. The Navy, well, we're going to talk about it later, the whole military issue, and but you say that Romney was wrong when he repeated a claim that about the Navy's size. He actually compared it all the way back to World War One.
They said the Navy is smaller now than any time since 1917. And then Obama came back with this comeback and said, we've also got fewer horses and bayonets. Our response was not quite as snappy. Our point was, well, actually, it's technically was a little smaller under George Bush. The number of naval ships that we had active was smaller slightly under George Bush. But to Obama's point is that the number of ships is not as relevant because the ships today can do so many more types of, different types of things. And that was really the point he was trying to make.
The president claimed, it looks like a lot of it's what the president claimed on this, but no, you got some Romney claims. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
The president claimed the record would back him up when he accused Governor Romney of opposing any federal help or assistance for troubled automakers. And they did go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth on that.
Yep. And so the deal is that Romney supported federal loan guarantees in this managed bankruptcy. That's different than direct government aid. That's what he opposed. But to say that he didn't support any federal help, I think federal loan guarantees by any definition would be considered certainly indirect help. The question was whether they could get any loans to guarantee at the time.
614-292-8513. My guest, Rob Farley, is going to be with us for just a few more minutes, so get your calls in now. Okay, so here we go. Governor Romney repeated his claim that the president undertook an apology tour criticizing America after Obama became president, and the president called that probably the biggest whopper that's been told during the entire campaign.
And one that we've heard over and over again, of course, as we know, Mitt Romney even titled a book about this very claim called No Apology. Last night he was particularly – and we've weighed in on that and said that in these speeches that he gave in the Middle East and in Europe and in Central America, he did not certainly ever say the word that he was sorry or apologize in any sort of typical way. But Romney went on to explain last night. He said that Obama had gone to the Middle East and he said and went on Arabic TV and said that America had been dismissive and derisive. And in fact, those comments came in a speech that President Obama gave in France in 2009. And he was talking about, he said that in America there's a failure to appreciate Europe's leading role in the world. And he said that so America has showed some arrogance and been dismissive and even derisive of that. So he was talking to a European audience here, not to a Middle Eastern audience, not on Arab TV. As again, though, if you look at all the transcripts, we've come to the conclusion that there really was no apology. There was a lot of, well, you know, we've made some mistakes. You've made some mistakes. Let's start anew here.
Dwayne in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I think your fact checker should also mention each date that Romney has said something, because he's very well known for saying something at one point in the argument and saying a totally opposite thing at some other point in the argument. So he's wiggling his the facts should not be allowed to be wiggled out because of some date.
You know, you make a good point there. And actually, last night we noted, for example, that there apparently is no more disagreement on pulling U.S. troops out of Afghanistan by the end of 2014. In the past, Romney had thrown in all kinds of qualifiers, saying that, you know, that yes, that's the date I'd like to do too, but we're going to be guided by what military commanders and events on the ground dictate. And last night he dropped all the qualifiers and he just said it flatly. He said, when I'm president, we'll make sure to bring our troops out by the end of 2014. So that was a bit of a change in position for him as well last night that, you know, as I said, is to your point there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dwayne. 614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment for my guest, Rob Farley, Deputy Managing Editor for FactCheck.org. 614-292-8513. Okay, so... this was a question that I thought this has been brought up before regarding Massachusetts grade schoolers and how they performed while Romney was governor. He was saying, bragging about how they tested number one in the country. I think it was third graders and eighth graders in math and science or math and reading or math and science and reading and whatever, or near it. But you're saying that didn't happen while he was in office.
Well, it did happen when he was in office, but actually Massachusetts was at or near the top long before Romney took office in Massachusetts as well. So, yes, it's true that all of the grades and subjects aligned at number one, but they were, you know, number one or number two for many years before. And the thing that we pointed out was that the state passed a landmark law in 1993. That emphasized testing a new curriculum and increased school funding. And most folks in Massachusetts credit that law with setting the table for, you know, these improved test scores. If you recall last night, then Obama shot back, well, of course, you cut funding when you came into office. And that's true, but Massachusetts was facing a huge budget shortfall when he came into office. And so there was some cutbacks in, but it was under fairly extraordinary circumstances.
And they have a balanced budget law in Massachusetts.
They do. 49 states in the country have to balance their budget. So oftentimes you'll hear, you know, presidential candidates or any candidates across the country will say, you know, I balanced the state budget when I was government 4 years in a row. Well, that's wonderful. You obeyed the law, really.
Then here's what something I learned. I guess I'd been missing this point along the way, but the issue about whether Russia is or is not the biggest geopolitical threat facing America, I thought that Romney had said that, but actually you're saying, no, that's not exactly right. And the president asserted that again last night.
He did. And look, perhaps we're you know, parsing some words here, but he called it, Romney said that Russia was the biggest geopolitical foe facing America. Now, the way that Obama put it was that he said it was the biggest threat. And interestingly, in the same interview, when Romney called Russia the biggest geopolitical foe, he did go on. They said, you know, well, what's the biggest threat to the, you know, the United States? And he said, a nuclear Iran is the biggest threat to, you know, American security. So in that very, interview, he talks about how the biggest threat is Iran. So it's a little bit distorted from the president.
And as far as the federal debt to other people, he said was $16 trillion. That was not quite correct either.
Right. Because we're fact checkers, we're kind of wonky. We don't let this kind of stuff slip through.
Hey, a trillion's a trillion.
Yeah. But what he's talking about here is the overall public debt. But when he's talking about owed to other people, that's a different figure altogether, because there's some money that we actually owe to ourselves for, say, the Social Security trusts. So really, the debt owed to the public is about $11 trillion. So it's not $16 trillion. He botched that figure a bit, but not the worst thing we've ever seen.
And he repeated, I think, the assertion about what people earned, the average pay cut for people over the past 4 years, $4,000-something dollars.
Yeah, we've been sort of back around on that. It's hard to get some hard numbers on that. Suffice to say that the household income, average household income, has declined some under President Obama. Whether it's $4,300 is, I guess, debatable, because we're just getting some newer numbers in. And so some of the numbers that we saw this week suggest that he's correct about that. But there is also some suggestion that that has sort of bottomed out. And so we're not you know, it's not continuing to decline as Romney suggests. But to his point, certainly family incomes have gone down. As we all know, we've been in the midst of a pretty severe recession at the beginning of his term.
Mm-hmm. He, getting back to the terrorism issues, he claimed that terrorism wasn't mentioned in any presidential debate in 2000. I'm not sure why that came up now. I remember him saying it, but you said that wasn't exactly correct either.
Yeah, again, here, because we're fact checkers, we're going to be sticklers for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And Al Gore actually mentioned in a debate back in 2000, he made a brief mention of terrorism. And so we pointed that out. It hasn't been wholly ignored before, you know, prior to, you know, this 2008 election.
So just overall, Rob, how did this one stack up against the other two in terms of how late you were up last night working the facts?
Not quite as late. Now, we've been through how many, 20-some Republican primary debates?
That's right.
And now four presidential debates. So perhaps we're getting to be more well-oiled machines. So we're out a little earlier. The other thing is, because it's foreign policy, there's a lot of, well, he said this, no, he didn't, he's mischaracterized my position. Those kinds of things for fact-checkers, it's easier to go back and check and say, well, what's the record? What did he say? Mm-hmm. Or what's his position? And let's go find out what his position was before, or what, you know, what's his position now? That's a lot easier than when we're talking domestic policy and having to dig through numbers with the Bureau of Labor Statistics and all that, and can keep us up till the very, very early morning hours.
What about our relation with Israel? Mitt Romney has said that it's it's most tense that it's ever been or has been in decades. The president says it's the best and strongest it's ever been, ever.
You know, I think there's certainly there's some evidence that Obama can point to that that the relationship is very strong. Now, last night, Romney said that Obama said he was going to create some daylight between ourselves and Israel. And we've heard that from Romney on the stump a number of times. And he's referring to a Washington Post story in July that reconstructed a meeting, a private meeting that Obama had with about a dozen Jewish leaders in 2009. So when he makes this quote, we're talking about the folks at this meeting later recalling what he said. So it's not that we have a transcript that we can check. And then what we go, the post story sort of later goes on to say was that it quotes this deputy national security advisor who says that the case that Obama was trying to make was that the United States will be a better partner to Israel if it has more credibility with the Arab states, that will be better, more useful friend to Israel if we have more friends of the in the Arab world. So some of that context was lost in the recounting from Romney last night.
Well, thanks a lot, Rob, for getting up and talking to us this morning again.
I'm happy to do it. Thanks. Thanks so much.
Rob Farley, he's deputy managing editor for factcheck.org. It's a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center of the University of Pennsylvania. We'll be right back and continue our discussion recap of the presidential debate, the last one in Boca Raton, Florida, last night. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Weeks before cantaloupe from a Colorado farm killed dozens of people last year, a food inspector gave the company a near-perfect score, 96 out of 100. But that inspector wasn't from the FDA, but from one of the many private companies the FDA uses, and Bloomberg News links some of them to the food producers they're supposed to inspect. I'm Neil Conan. Who keeps our food safe? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 66 degrees in downtown Columbus with cloudy skies, partly sunny skies today, a high of 78. Clouds tonight with a slight chance of showers, a low of 58 degrees. Mostly sunny and a high of 78 on Wednesday, more sunshine and a high of 79 on Thursday. Support for 89.7 comes from the State Auto Insurance Companies, providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
President Barack Obama and his GOP challenger, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, wrapped up their third and final debate last night in Boca Raton, Florida. They heartily shook hands before and after the session, but during the debate, the exchange was pointed, sometimes mean, and largely focused on foreign policy as planned, which was probably the biggest surprise of all. We just went over some of the substance of the debate in the last segment with Fact Check. org. We'll continue that conversation and talk about style and what separates the two candidates going forward in the final 2 weeks of the campaign. Joining us now is Bill Hershey, retired longtime Statehouse and Washington political writer. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thank you.
Also, by phone, Sean Kay, chair of the International Studies and professor at Ohio Wesleyan University. Hi, Sean.
Good morning.
If you have a question or comment for our guests, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Bill Hershey, many saw this debate as a role reversal of the first debate between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. You know, Mitt Romney being the assertive one, Barack Obama the passive one. What did you think about that?
I think that's the impression I have. We had Mitt the moderate last night. Mr. I want to get along with people. My policy is not that much different from the president. And then we had the president who in the first debate seemed to be distracted, passive. It was Barry the Basher last night. He thought maybe he was playing in the World Series. He was trying to knock one out of the park or knock down Governor Romney's positions. He aggressively singled out positions Governor Romney had taken and said they were inaccurate or wrong. And he seemed like the hot candidate last night as opposed to the cool one.
And Mitt Romney responded, hey, all you're doing is attacking me. Gosh.
Yeah, he
what's
almost
that about?
It was almost Mitt the martyr a little bit.
and I thought that it was he was passive, but it was more to me along the lines of passive aggressive versus absolute passivity, which is more the way Obama seemed in the first.
I think you're right. If you looked at Romney's facial expressions during the debate, there was some discussion afterward. I don't know if he was perspiring, but he was sort of reddish. He was sort of, you know, he didn't like what Obama was saying. Passive-aggressive would be a good way to describe it. I think the facial expressions told that.
Sean Kay, you knew what they were talking about for foreign policy and foreign affairs. It's right up your alley. In general, what's your impression of the discussion overall? Was it filled with inaccuracies, or did it have some basis in reality?
I thought overall it was actually on the things that they talked about, a informative discussion. And what surprised me the most was the shift in Mitt Romney towards on several major issues, both effectively endorsing the position already taken by the president and not taking advantage of areas where he could have made significant political points had he wanted to. And I'd be very curious to see how that plays out, because, for example, a lot of his supporters, I think, were very ramped up that he would continue to press this Libya issue. And he almost took a complete pass on that and instead tried to make a larger point about the Middle East. But it's kind of an interesting question. I think the problem for Mitt Romney, in the sense that he needed to go into this debate to shift from being more of a candidate to more presidential, and he, in so doing, also wanted to alleviate people of concerns that he might have been sort of a warmonger kind of candidate. And at the end of the day, he found himself agreeing so much with the president's existing policies. I'd be very curious to find out in the coming days how his sort of hardcore political supporters actually take a read on that. But I think his goal was to come across as my colleague said, as more moderate. And for the president, it was to make very clear that he has been the commander in chief and he's made very tough decisions. And for both of them, they wanted to kind of relate these larger larger foreign policy issues back to the bread and butter issues for Americans in terms of the economy.
Do you think that this seemed like almost a return to the days when politics stopped at the water's edge, or Republicans and Democrats agreed on the overall thrust of what America's role in the world should be? Do you think that's actually what Governor Romney believes, or was it a tactical decision to?
Yeah, that's a great question. My guess is that is very much a tactical decision. If you know, candidates make certain choices, and the choices that he has made, with just a few exceptions, on his foreign policy team, Governor Romney has, are basically the same sort of neoconservative people who brought America into the Iraq War, for example. And so that's why he has to make this tactical shift. And the data supports why you would do that, because, for example, majorities, according to the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations, majorities of the American public are pretty much right where the president was, for example, on the quote-unquote lead-from-behind model on Libya. Americans are being polled today at the highest level of isolationism sentiment since World War II. And 68% of Americans today say the defense budget should be cut. And that's gone up by 10% just over the last 18 months or so. And only 32% of the American public think the defense budget should not be cut, according to these polls. So that's where the public is. And so as a candidate, even if your basic vision is more assertive, and if you look at his speech at the Virginia Military Academy, it was really calling for a strong, robust America, increasing military spending, that kind of thing. But last night, you did not see that Mitt Romney. It was a very significant shift. And whether that, how people choose to interpret that, of course, is up to them.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Earlier this month, we talked about the enhanced role of social media in the election. And last night, the tweets were flying on Twitter, and they were pounding the posts on Facebook, of course. And in the land of Xbox, they again hosted the Xbox Live Election 2012, allowing users to watch raw debate feed and weigh in on the action in real time. So joining us now to talk about Xbox Live Election and how it worked during the debates is Ryan Luckin. He's Senior Public Relations Manager for Xbox. Welcome back, Ryan.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
So how did it go?
You know, by all internal guesses, it was an overwhelming success. Considering this is the first year we've done this program, the volume of respondents, the number of people who came back week after week to participate in the polls, was just really staggering. So we're absolutely thrilled.
Yeah, the returnees, I would imagine, are like gold. How many? What was the volume, and how many did return week after week?
Sure. Let me throw some big numbers at you guys. For the last two debates, we saw over 100,000 Xbox Live community members participating week after week in the polls. What that means is there are probably more people watching who chose to kind of have that sit-back experience and maybe not participate. But we know based on clicks through the controller that more than 100,000 participated in each of the last two debates, which is really impressive. I think what's more interesting is that on both debates, we had more than 30,000 of those 100,000. So just a little under 30% of those, or right at 30%, they participated in every question. So when you're getting that type of attach, that's just unheard of when it comes to polling. Last night, for instance, we had more than 3 million individual responses to questions. So huge, huge engagement. When you couple that with our ability to kind of dig deep and find out how many of those respondents were undecided, how many coming in were leaning one way or another, we can pull out some really interesting data points.
Well, what do you know about the demographic of and now that it's over with, of who is doing? You predicted maybe skewing younger and more female.
We did, and more female, I think, than people would think, right, when they think about X. And that's some work we did with YouGov on the front end. To kind of identify who are the Xbox users, who would be participating in this. And that's actually some of the data that we'll start pulling together today.
Mm-hmm.
What we basically do is we take the data from last night and we do some extensive research about 48 hours after the debate. What we can tell based on last night was we had about 2,500 what we call Xbox undecided swing voters participating last night. We identify those people right up front in the debate. We can ask them a few simple questions to find out where they stand on certain issues, and then we can monitor how they react to questions throughout the debate. The swing voters are, of course, the ones that everyone are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Last night was another victory for Obama on the swing voters. At the end of the debate, they broke 39% Obama, 18% Romney, based on those 2,500 folks.
And the rest still undecided.
That's right, yep.
The topics of the debate changed a lot, even though they did get into economics and some domestic policy last night, in so much as it related to foreign policy. It's a much different tenor when you get into foreign policy, particularly for, a lot. Plus, it was the third debate. Any reflection of that in what you were doing?
We tailor our questions. We work with YouGov and some of our team here to kind of tailor the questions. So as Romney or Obama are responding to something, we try to react in real time within about 60 seconds with a question on, how do you feel so-and-so responded to that, or how do you feel so-and-so, answered this question. So that's ultimately our goal. I think just in terms of overall response last night, I know we're going up against some NLCS baseball going on. We had Monday Night Football going on. So we're definitely encouraged about the amount of audience we had just tuning in for that final debate.
And they could submit poll questions via Twitter, right?
They could. We had a program last night. So, the basis of Xbox and the elections program started with Rock the Vote. We kept that going last night. We kicked off a free concert that streamed on Xbox Live solely last night, sponsored by Rock the Vote down in Boca. We used that as a jumping off point, and I can confirm, we've signed up through Xbox thousands of voters this year just through Xbox, having people come in and get interested and see these types of opportunities to participate, which is really, one of the best parts of this program. We kicked that off last night, and it's been great to kind of work with Rock the Vote and get people registered.
Bill Hershey?
The results that you talked about are really amazing. Are you confident that you're able to prevent what you're doing being manipulated by either of the two campaigns when you do something this extensive?
Well, manipulated in terms of handing over the data, just so I understand the question.
Having people, having calls planted, having participation planted.
Ah, right. That would be a lot of Xboxes.
Yeah.
I mean, we're... And I would like to sell that many Xboxes, certainly. No, I think, we do a lot of work with YouGov, and I won't pretend to be the expert on the polling side of this. Just to take that data, we do a lot of reweighting to help understand what do the results mean for the people that we know are on the Xbox, and how do those results match up against the outside world and what we would normally see for a broader poll.
Okay. Well, Ryan Luckin, thanks so much for joining us again today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Ryan Luckin, he's Senior PR Manager for Xbox. Thanks again. Sean Kay, let's listen a little bit to the debate now. We haven't. Let's hear from first the president on Syria.
What we're seeing taking place in Syria is heartbreaking. And that's why we are going to do everything we can to make sure that we are helping the opposition. But we also have to recognize that, you know, for us to get more entangled militarily in Syria is a serious step. And we have to do so making absolutely certain that we know who we are helping, that we're not putting arms in the hands of folks who eventually could turn them against us or our allies in the region.
And let's hear from Governor Romney on Syria.
Syria is an opportunity for us because Syria plays an important role in the Middle East, particularly right now. Syria is Iran's only ally in the Arab world. It's their route to the sea. It's the route for them to arm Hezbollah in Lebanon, which threatens, of course, our ally Israel. And so seeing Syria remove Assad is a very high priority for us. Number two, seeing the replacement government being responsible people is critical for us. And finally, we don't want to have military involvement there. We don't want to get drawn into a military conflict. And so the right course for us is working through our partners and with our own resources to identify responsible parties within Syria, organize them, bring them together in a form of not, if not government, a form of council that can take the lead in Syria, and then make sure they have the arms necessary to defend themselves.
So, Sean Kay, I don't know. I'm not sure whether they're so far apart, but they seem to put things in different terms.
Well, this is a good example of what I was getting at earlier. The actual policy differences here are virtually nil. The administration can be given credit for doing the things that President Obama said he's doing. And the bottom line is the American public is clearly not hungry for another military engagement in a place like Syria. This exposes a disconnect at the broader level about the war in Libya, which the president did try to bring out a little bit, which is that, you know, one of the dilemmas is when you intervene in places like that, if you're going to start that war, then you better be sure to make sure that there's a peace to secure afterwards. And we are struggling with that today in Libya today. That's the broader debate that hasn't happened with regard to Libya. But it's important with regard to Syria because the one difference that they did get at there is that Mitt Romney, Governor Romney, has said earlier that we should be engaged in arming various people inside of Libya, in Syria. But if there's any lesson from the Libya war, very easily weapons can be turned over to people who would not be commensurate to long-term American interests, first of all. And to say that we don't want to be militarily engaged in a place, but then get on the side of a group, that giving them weapons is to get militarily engaged. You have to train people, you have to equip people, you have to get the weapons to them. And the fact of the matter is, to a large degree, that is already happening through third parties around the region. And so it's not like that is a vacuum there. It is apparently going on. So basically, that's the one difference. But it just as a military technical concept, to start supplying arms to groups that we know very little about is to get militarily engaged. And for many people, that is where you get a slippery slope of entanglement in American national security interests.
Sean, neither candidate last night addressed a question that sort of goes to the heart of the changing role of America's foreign policy in this region. For years, we put a higher premium on stability than change in democracy. Mm-hmm. And in Egypt, specifically now, we have a democratically elected government.
Yep.
that Governor Romney was very critical of, and President Obama hinted at that we have to try to guide them. But is this something that the candidates should tell the people more forthrightly, that if you have democracy, you may get a government that you don't like or that we don't like?
Both candidates were basically in agreement last night, which is to my surprise, you know, about the really difficult and gray area nature of the entire region. And that is not the kind of worldview that has been part of the campaign up till now. So I think that's actually very helpful to voters to get that broader perspective. The problem with the argument or the interesting part of the argument that candidate Romney was putting forward is that this region is kind of going into flames, and as if there's something America can or should be able to do about that, as if America can control the destinies of hundreds of millions of people all around the world. And a critical point you bring up about Mubarak, again, they ended up agreeing on. And so, ironically, as a tactical diplomatic measure, that actually undermined degree of the argument, because if you agree that Mubarak should have been pulled, in other words, part of the critique was America has abandoned its allies, for example, like Mubarak, and that led to the Muslim Brotherhood come up. But then the whole region, therefore, is in turmoil. But if you then say, I agreed with that, it was the right thing to do, that is actually a cognitive dissonance in the basic argument. I'd like to add, if I could, one other example of that, which is on Iran. They both were in agreement on diplomacy and military force being the last choice. But on Governor Romney's point on diplomatic isolation, that Ahmadinejad should be indicted under the Genocide Convention, that their diplomats are treated like the pariah that they are around the world, that leaves you wondering, well, who then are you going to negotiate with, right, if you want to get to the point where you can do this without actually going to war?
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back.
In the early days of the Iraq War, Marines fired on a family in three cars that didn't heed their warning to stop or turn around. Three members of the family were killed. On the next Fresh Air, one of the Marines, Lulo Bello, tells us how he was haunted by the experience and recently managed to locate and meet two survivors with the help of reporter Dexter Filkins, who will also join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. This is WOSU 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in just about 20 minutes at 11 o'clock. Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and it's Tech Tuesday, a discussion of car technology advancements and also the latest gadgets with Russell Hawley, tech blogger for Geek.com. Join us for Tech Tuesday from 11 till noon. Partly sunny skies today with a high of 78 degrees, clouds tonight with a slight chance of rain, a low of 58. Support for 89.7 comes from the Wellington School, where children are encouraged to discover and develop their unique potential in preschool through grade 12. Wellington will host a visit day for prospective middle and upper school students on Monday, October 29th at 9 a.m. More at wellington.org. And support comes from Home Instead Senior Care, providing seniors in Central Ohio with one-on-one support from caregivers who receive training, are bonded, and insured. More at homeinstead.com or 1-800-4-SENIORS. Home Instead Senior Care. To us, it's personal. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are recapping the third and final presidential debate of this election season between, of course, President Barack Obama and his GOP challenger, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And, of course, my guests are Bill Hershey, retired longtime State House and Washington politics reporter, and Sean Kay, chair of international studies and professor at Ohio Wesleyan University. When the moderator asked, what is America's role in the world, this is how Governor Romney responded.
Well, I absolutely believe that America has a responsibility and the privilege of helping defend freedom and promote the principles that make the world more peaceful. And those principles include human rights, human dignity, free enterprise, freedom of expression, elections, because when there are elections, people tend to vote for peace. They don't vote for war. So we want to promote those principles around the world. We recognize that there are places of conflict in the world. We want to end those conflicts to the extent humanly possible. But in order to be able to fulfill our role in the world, America must be strong.
Right after Governor Romney described his plan for America's role in the world, a tweet popped up, something to the effect of the 80s called, they want their foreign policy back. And I guess that echoes a little bit of what President Obama has asserted along the same lines. Let's now hear, and Governor Romney also uses this as a segue into, as he sees it, the failing economy and why a strong economy is in the interest of America's national security. And President Obama, as you mentioned earlier, Sean, responded, they both kind of got into that a little bit. He pretty much kicked off his response to that question, though, with the economy, talking about repositioning ourselves so we can start rebuilding America. He said, talked about lowering the deficit, making ourselves more energy independent and so forth. Let's hear what he had to say, though, in characterizing his opponent's response.
Governor Romney has taken a different approach throughout this campaign. Now, both at home and abroad, he has proposed wrong and reckless policies. Now, he's praised George Bush as a good economic steward and Dick Cheney as somebody who's shows great wisdom and judgment, and taking us back to those kinds of strategies that got us into this mess are not the way that we are going to maintain leadership in the 21st century.
So that's pretty strong, Sean Kay, strong, wrong and reckless policies, and then comparing them, of course, to the previous Republican administration. What did you make of the differences in their responses to that question?
Well, I think Governor Romney's statement was one of his better moments of the debate, and I think that there are broad principles about American foreign policy that most people would find themselves generally in agreement with. And we see that also in polls over time, whether they're Democrat or Republican. I think those are – there's an excellent speech that Governor Romney gave in Warsaw, Poland during the summer. It was one of the few high points, to be honest, of his trip to Europe. But it was a real high point, and it's worth going and looking at if people want to hear more of the thinking behind that philosophy. And he also, you know, interestingly enough, back on the Middle East, he had some very interesting points about what needs to happen there: economic development, better education, gender equality, the rule of law. President Obama's comment, though, is also going right at some of the, you know, sort of Achilles heel of this worldview that surrounds Governor Romney in his campaign. And again, for example, in terms of polling data, we now see that 67% of the American public say the Iraq war was not worth it. And Governor Romney in 2008 said that he supported it and continued to support it. And so, you know, that's a disconnect for him in terms of the dissonance of what he's saying. But, you know, the bigger question I'd even raise, and I'd be curious to know what our other guest thinks about this, since we're asking each other good questions. I was actually quite interested to hear what wasn't talked about. And I'm curious to know how he thought that the sort of pivot back to the economy and the domestic issues was working for each candidate.
Bill Hershey?
I think that's exactly what Governor Romney wanted to do in the debate. And if you listen to some of the commentators afterwards, they said that he wanted to talk about the economy because he thinks that's his strong suit. And he frequently pivoted back to that, as you said. And it was almost as though Governor Romney thinks he does have the momentum. In Ohio, the polling shows he's cut the president's lead to 5 points, and he didn't want to take any controversial stances on foreign policy that would differ much from President Obama, particularly not talking about the Benghazi incident. But I think the president responded to that by saying the policies he's trying to put in place would also make the American economy stronger and therefore the country stronger in the world. But I think Romney was more emphatic about that.
If you have a question or comment for our guests, 614-292-8513. We're looking back at the debate last night, the third and final debate between presidential candidates, President Barack Obama and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney. A couple of fact checks for you, Sean, that I'm curious about. First of all, the trade with Latin America came up. I think for the first time that I've heard it and any prominence in the election. It might have come up during speeches here and there with Governor Romney. But in any event, he was implying or seemed to be implying that we aren't paying enough attention to those burgeoning economies. And he compared Latin America to China, saying that it's a huge opportunity with the right time zone and apparently a more familiar language, which made him was always a plus for him. Is it accurate to say that that the United States is ignoring trade with Latin America?
No. It's also not accurate to suggest that it's somehow more important than our relationship with China. Clearly, though, Latin America and Africa, too, are incredibly important export markets, potentially, for the United States. Mm-hmm. And so it does require significant attention, and I think that's a bipartisan issue that you wouldn't see a lot of disagreement from either of the administrations or campaigns in any event. But it's a good example, though, of it was mentioned, but it wasn't really talked about. And, you know, I was – the one thing that's staggered me about the debate, I think the nature of the questions were sort of how would you handle this issue of the day. But two of the most crucial issues confronting this country, or three even, I would say, really were not talked about sufficiently. And the biggest one, to my mind, is the Eurozone crisis. Not a single mention of what's going on in the Eurozone and how it affects the United States and what we're doing to prepare our economy for ongoing crisis there. A second issue that was not addressed at all was climate change. And that is also, you know, if you listen to former national security advisors and senior military officials, even for the President Bush administration, when they were asked, Richard Clark and Anthony Zinni, what the number one threat to America was, neither of them said Iran or terrorism. They said climate change. And then finally, the issue of China what is going to make America more competitive? Well, in China right now, we're seeing rising labor costs. We are seeing businesses coming back to the United States because of that. But what's really going to make America more competitive is investments in education in this country. And President Obama did emphasize that a lot, and I think with some degree of effectiveness. But why it's so important to our national power and to our foreign policy when we have to import right now high-paying, high-skilled jobs, jobs that require master's degrees and PhDs. These are engineering jobs, science jobs, mathematics jobs. And I think in terms of the content, the president was emphasizing that. But on the other hand, we didn't hear from either of them how exactly are we going to ensure that this really moves America forward in the 21st century. Right now here in Ohio, there are a lot of jobs going filled by foreigners at the high end of the skill sets of labor. And how we're going to address that is a bipartisan problem that's going to require revenue, and it's going to require investments. And so the sooner we can get our heads around that, the more competitive we're going to be as a country for the long haul. And that's relevant to whether we're going to be dealing with exporting products to Latin America or Africa as well. But these are growing economies, mm-hmm. actually. And so they're places that we ought to be paying significant attention to, no question about it.
I think there was one telling comment by Governor Romney towards the end of the debate on the subject that you talk about, investing more in teachers. They were joking that they all love teachers, but Governor Romney said that that's up to, and I'm simplifying this a little bit, up to state and local government school boards to hire these teachers, not the federal government. And the federal government's role in primary and secondary education is a limited one, but I think that President Obama talked about continuing to expand it, specifically targeted at math and science teachers.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if Governor Romney doesn't want to do that.
And is that's part of the cuts that he would make if he was elected president?
Well, that's a real serious issue with regard to at least what we saw in the Ryan budget that went forward, and which is also trying to grapple with another very serious issue, which is the debt. How we balance these things is the crucial question. And so they both are for, you know, good education and so forth. But the question, you know, you really have to look at where their budgets are if you want to understand it. The one place I'd just suggest that listeners might want to think about this is that, you know, one of the biggest crises in American foreign policy history was the Sputnik crisis of 1957 to 1958. And our response to that was a long-term major investment of federal government money and private sector engagement in science, technology, math skills, foreign language skills, a major investment. This kind of investment created NASA, helped facilitate the National Science Foundation. It laid much of the critical infrastructure groundwork for our modern economy that we all benefit from today. We have had nothing like that since 9/11. We've had nothing like that since the BP oil spill. We've had nothing like that to think about these challenges in the Middle East. And so this really gets to a very fundamental question of the philosophy between the two candidates. What is the role of government in dealing with these kind of future investments for the long-term competitive nature of this country? And so that's where, you know, wherever people fall on that spectrum, you know, it's important to challenge these assumptions to see exactly where the policies lie and where the budgets go.
Sean, the only reference I heard to the Eurozone crisis was a couple times Governor Romney said that if we follow President Obama's policy, we'll be on the road to Greece.
I don't know
if we're all marching, but why do you think he didn't elaborate on that? Because he has talked about this before. We're marching towards
that. Really was the only reference.
Yeah.
It's a popular talking point. Greece has very deep structural problems that have nothing to do with the kind of problems we have in the United States. But they have a major, you know, deep regulations. You know, just running a business can take 17, 18 different signatures you got to get. They're reforming that. They're cutting it. You know, Anne's had me on the show before. I use Ireland as a better marker because they followed a lot of the policies in the 2000s that indeed we did that led to our banking crisis. And now you got a country of 4.5 million people that owe about $867 billion, and they've got now 15% unemployment and so forth. That's the European model I'd look at. But look, Europe is our closest friend and ally in the world. And that wasn't really talked about very much. There's been a lot of Europe bashing going on in this country, and that doesn't really help educate about the nature of the common problems that we all confront. And, you know, you can look at Europe and talk about Greece. The countries in Europe that are growing are the Nordic countries, the Scandinavian countries. And they have an entirely different model of government. So to draw conclusions based on, you know, what's going on in one tiny little country that is about 3% of the overall economy of Europe really has nothing to do whatsoever with what's going on in the United States of America.
Sean Kay, thanks so much for joining us again today.
Thank you.
Sean Kay is Chair of International Studies and Professor at Ohio Wesleyan University. And Bill Hershey, thanks again to you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Bill Hershey, retired longtime State House and Washington politics reporter. And thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.